supporting the fight to keep the mental health clinics open was a period of very, very intense activity. And I remember one fall that for 5 weeks in a row, our unions were bringing down about 300 people one week after the other. Believe me, no mean feat to get that many people together with buses and bringing them down to the Board of Supervisors when they were kept postponing a decision about what they were going to do about the clinic. So we had to keep coming back. I do want to mention that from about 1980 to 1995, during the years that I was active in my in two AFSCME locals, I was elected a delegate to the County Federation of Labor from both AFSCME Local 2620 and Local 2712 while I worked for the state and then when I worked for the county, which meant going to their meetings and once a month. And meant being involved with activities that encompass the entire labor movement. And it was interesting because there were a number of us who were who would used to get together to try to see about bringing up certain issues that we thought were particularly important, what we considered progressive issues, and which I would say we didn't have a lot of success in getting action on those issues because we were still a very small group of people who would raise them. It was interesting being on the county Fed because you certainly could get an idea of where most union members stood. But on the other hand, the people who come to the county Fed meeting may not be totally representative of the, you know, the entire membership of some 800,000 union members in Los Angeles County. I'd also like to talk about sometime, I believe, during the early 80s, because I cannot remember the date, there, during the time that commissions on the status of women were being established at various levels, county, city, at the state level, there was an organized effort to establish a Long Beach Commission on the Status of Women. And one of the main proponents of that plan was Renee Simon, who was on the city council from the 3rd District at that time. And the main opponent of that idea was Eunice Sato, who was a city council member from the, I think it was the 7th District, I think encompassing north, the west side of Long Beach. And Eunice was very conservative member, and I do mean conservative and reactionary in many ways too, member of the city council Her husband was a wealthy businessman, and she was also active in the, I'm not sure which church, and maybe also the South Coast Ecumenical Council, which is made up of many different churches. Anyhow, finally the issue came to the, I don't remember what committee of the council was in charge of it, but they held a hearing. And both sides obviously mobilized their constituents and supporters to come out and to speak in preparation for the vote of that committee, which would then go to the city council, which we knew there wasn't probably very much support for. So that vote of that committee would be really important in determining how the city council would vote. Anyhow, that was sort of a never-to-be-forgotten meeting. The forces opposed to the establishment of the commission far outnumbered the supporters, and Eunice had done, apparently, obviously, a very good job in getting these women together. And there were women from many of the fundamentalist churches, also women from the women women from the Mormon Church. There were many of the women were quite young, and their dress was obviously meant to impress us with their femininity, because I remember so many of them were wearing blouses or tops that had Peter Pan collars with lace on the outside edges. So it was a very very calculated to show that these were women who were feminine, not feminist, but feminine.
So how did they define, and why did they like their femininity beyond the fact that, yes, they were cute little blouses?
Because, I mean, they didn't talk really about that. I'm saying that that was a visual.
Okay.
It was a visual, clue.
But then what were the objections?
But the objections to the commission was that we didn't need a commission on the status of women, that women, that the commissions usually were set up to deal with women who were working, and many of these women who were there said that they were against women working, that women should be at home taking care of their children and their families, and that the commissions, wherever they had been established, were very strident in pushing for changes in the conditions under which women live, and that they felt that this was a wrong emphasis and that it did not represent the overwhelming majority of women.
Which was there at that particular meeting, of course, were there. Yeah, all right.
Anyhow, it was a very acrimonious and long meeting in the afternoon, and the committee, despite Renee Simon's strong support, voted against establishing a commission on the status of women, and that was going to be their recommendation to the city council, and the effort went down to the sea. It was very, very exciting, and but also very exhausting, and made us we were not very happy about it. I also want to mention that sometime in the early 80s, I believe, we had a very active Long Beach Housing Action Association, which put up a big fight for rent control. And this was, and also for building more decent, affordable housing in our community. And actually, I would say they probably dated back from the late 70s. I am not sure of the dates of when these were involved. And I was involved. It was a very active group that actually made some efforts to organize tenants around rent increases, because the possibility of getting rent control was really very dim in Long Beach, so that it involved putting up a fight against rent increases by individual landlords. So we did some organizing in large apartment complexes, particularly in the northwest part of the city, if I remember correctly. The organization did finally fold. Mm-hmm. I had been active in it for a number of years. It did finally fold, and then began to, had a renaissance several years later. But I can't really tell you. You're going to have to get that information from other people, because I was not involved in its later in its later form. Moving on, after my union presidency ended at the end of 92, I had actually retired at the beginning of 91, but we were unable to find anybody who was willing to take on the presidency of Local 2712 for 2 years, and the union constitution allows an elected officer who's elected while they are still working in the field, mm-hmm. to finish out their term, even if they are retiring. So that's how come I remained president until the end of 92, when somebody was willing to come forward and take over the presidency. Anyhow, at that point, at the end of 92, I planned to, reintegrate myself into activities in Long Beach, because during the years that I was very active in the union, I basically had withdrawn from my activities in Long Beach groups. It simply was not possible to do both. The union was very, very... Union activities were very, very absorbing and very time-consuming. Anyhow, I didn't imagine or couldn't imagine how widespread my involvement in Long Beach and in the community of Long Beach and LA would become. So in retirement, I have to say that I have been at least as active as I was when I was working. It's just that I don't necessarily have to get up early in the morning, and I do a lot more of my activity can go on through the house, at home, I should say, because you can do phoning at home and so on. Anyhow, from 93 and 94, I was very active in health access and in a Long Beach healthcare coalition that was formed around Proposition 186 that was working to pass a single-payer health plan. And we did carry on a lot of activity with petitions and leafleting at shopping centers and I think even some door-to-door work. But as people know, that proposition unfortunately was defeated by a huge infusion of insurance company money that put on a huge propaganda campaign with Henry and Louise, Harry and Louise on television. Mm-hmm. Also, since 1993, I've been involved in the AFSCME Retiree Chapter 36, as it's called, and was president from 93 until October of 98, very recently. And again, for some time I had been looking for somebody else to take over the presidency of that retiree chapter, and though we had have had a wonderful executive board and a sizable one of about 11 or 12 people, no one was willing to take on the presidency until the end of 98. But fortunately, that that changed when Michael appeared on the scene, got involved with our retiree chapter, and indicated his willingness to run for president. The retiree chapter, I should mention, works to preserve and expand the pension and health benefits of retirees, and for action and on legislative and political issues that are of concern to retirees, and also to the wider community, because all these retirees have children and families that are affected by issues that that retirees can have some impact on. This has been a very rewarding and, you know, what shall I say, a new area of involvement for me. I really have enjoyed working with the retirees on the executive board of the chapter, and have found that there's a somewhat different attitude on the part of retirees, where they are more attentive to the direct effect on them of things like Social Security and Medicare, and where many of them feel themselves more fragile and more and feel like they can be hurt very badly. They see a very, very direct connection with their own lives and what can happen. And they feel very vulnerable. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. So that this gives some urgency to them. And of course, retirees supposedly have more time to devote to action of various kinds, although retirees also get involved in a lot of other things. So it wasn't, you know, we weren't always able to get people involved in the issues that the chapter was working on. Since 1993, I also was active in the Los Angeles chapter of the Coalition of Labor Union Women, known as CLU, C-L-U-W, working on issues of concern to working women and with a goal also of encouraging the promotion of women to leadership in various union locals. Unfortunately, it was a very small chapter, and some of the leadership was very, what shall I say, stagnating, which was, well, that isn't even the right word. It was very very, it's sort of stifling is the right word, I guess. Stifled efforts to really get that group involved in just, you know, countless issues that women union members, that are of concern to women union members. And it finally, it does now have some new leadership and is becoming a lot more active. But I dropped out of activity when I became ill in 95, I think. Also since 93, I've been active in the Los Angeles Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness, and I was vice chair of that, of their executive committee, up until, I guess, the fall of 98. Again, fortunately, somebody was willing to step in, and I was able to step down from position as vice chair, although I continue to be a member of the board. And the LA Coalition is a very active organization that has full-time staff and develops programs of action to involve people around the concerns of homelessness, near homelessness, people on welfare, people on general relief, and involves people in actions such as demonstrations at the Board of Supervisors, because they work primarily at the county level since welfare and welfare is a county function. When I say homelessness and near homelessness, because for many people who are poor, they are one step away from being homeless. They testify at Board of Supervisors meeting, They put out a great deal of publicity. They do a lot of outreach and education in the community. They get on radio, not usually on television, to try to both educate and involve the community in the issues of homelessness and welfare, which are not exactly, what shall I say, the most popular issues in the community. I also, since about 94, I've been active in the Long Beach Area Coalition for the Homeless, which is made up of homeless persons and homeless service providers. And my main function has been acting as a liaison with the Los Angeles Coalition to End Homelessness, bringing many of the programs and actions mm-hmm. and materials that they put out to the Long Beach Homeless Coalition. And
what is the setup from the Long Beach Homeless Coalition? Are there any city members or just active local members?
Yeah, no, the members are basically homeless persons, the Homeless Organizing Committee, and agencies that provide services to homeless or low-income people.
City agencies, Long Beach,
no,
county?
Primarily, both, I shouldn't say that. The city of Long Beach does have a homeless services coordinator who sits on that coalition, but most everybody are from private nonprofit agencies. There aren't city agencies other than the homeless services coordinator that cater to or deal with the needs of homeless people. Those are part of the function of the city manager and the council. This coalition does put out a newsletter, which I write articles for, and I shouldn't mention that in the last number of years, I do write articles not only for the Long Beach Homeless Coalition, but also was writing articles for the Retiree Chapter newsletter and for the COC newsletter. So I've taken to doing articles as well as being active in other ways. And basically, the Long Beach Homeless Coalition, to finish up there, has been working to improve services to homeless people and to protect their rights. And we have an advocacy committee, of which I'm co-chair, and which does make an effort to mobilize people for actions not only in Long Beach but at the county level, and getting together people and getting people to go on buses to the Board of Supervisors around some of the pressing issues around welfare reform and general relief that have been so so prominent in the last, well, since, what was it, 96, when Clinton signed the welfare reform measure.
And personal responsibility.
And personal responsibility, right.
Yeah.
This also, I would say, has been my activity both in the LA Coalition and in the Long Beach Coalition on Homelessness, has been sort of expanding my interest into new areas. But I would certainly say that my background and experience as a social worker has stood me in good stead, because many of the concerns of both these coalitions involve information in fields that I've in the past had experience and work in working in those fields, in that field. So again, it's part of an extension of something that I had mentioned earlier, of utilizing my background and my experience in social work for bringing about changes, larger changes in the society that affect thousands and tens of thousands of people, actually, around certainly the question of welfare reform. Certainly because, for example, many of the people of the providers of services to the homeless in the Long Beach Homeless Coalition are, you know, very narrowly involved with a very small group of people, but can see the connection with what happens on the larger, in the larger picture around the changes that are being made in general relief and in aid to families with dependent children, as it used to be called. So this is for me certainly a feeling of continuity of what of utilizing my background and experience from past years in what I'm doing now. Since 1994, I've also been on the advisory committee of Holland House, and a small Long Beach, it's called Sober Living Residence for Women who've been substance abusers. And the advisory committee works to raise money. Remember, this is a private, non-profit, very small facility, and which is supported by the fees that the residents pay. The residents are either on general relief, where they receive the magnificent stipend of $225 a month plus food stamps, and they pay $200 of that for their room and board, plus they put their food stamps in.
I didn't realize it was private. Who?
Yes, Holland House is absolutely a private facility. Actually, it is one of two residences under the umbrella of the Harbor Area Halfway Houses. The other residence that's part of that is called Hoffman House, and that's a halfway house for women who spend the last 3 months of their incarceration at Hoffman House, and where their room and board is paid for by the California Department of Corrections. So Hoffman House is supported by public funds, by state funds. But Holland House, which is newer than Hoffman House, does not have any public funding other than the money that people who are on GR pay for their room and board. Also, the women at Holland House are, many of them are working at absolutely minimum wage jobs. Most of them do not have any training or skills. They work as security guards. They work as, I'm trying to think some of the jobs that they do. They're all very unskilled jobs.
Then when they leave Holland House?
Well, Holland House has one important difference from other sober living facilities in the Long Beach area. Anyhow, I did say that it was for women. And unlike some of the other facilities, which have a time limit that people can stay there, Holland House does not set a time limit, but rather works directly with the women in groups and individual counseling around what they need. And for many of these women who may have been on the street before they came to Holland House, or may have been in prison and maybe came from Hoffman House to Holland House, they're people who've had very little of a functional life. They're people, they're women, many of whom came from homes where they had been abused in many different ways and had had little support for anything. Many of them came from homes where substance abuse was the rule with their parents. And so they're women who have had very little in the way of a nurturing, supportive background and environment. And it's really, it really is impossible to imagine until you can see it, how long it takes when people make a decision to turn their lives around for them to actually be able to function on their own independently. Because when they leave Holland House, there aren't many group facilities that they can go to where there are some support. Although Holland House does not have any big staff, but sort of a part-time staff that provides counseling and group sessions, group support sessions. So they basically enable women to remain there. There have been a couple of people that I know that were there for 3 or 4 years.
Well, now, is there tutoring access to, you said, I believe I understood you to say that many women lack even basic skills.
Yes, they're absolutely there. In other words, when they're staying at Holland House, there is a rule that says you can't sit around and twiddle your thumbs. You have to either be going to school, to work, to a training program, and you may be, if you're in school, you may be on general relief, or if you're in a training program, you may be on general relief, but you must be doing something toward rebuilding your life.
All right.
Yes, absolutely. So there is, that is a rule, and the staff to help find those resources, which of course, you know, get less and less, unfortunately, with the cuts that have taken place in government programs and the resultant, overburdening of private service agencies. So it is difficult. But I think that Holland House makes a really valiant effort to also be part of any movement that is trying to make changes and bring about changes. And of course, in my usual role as part of that advisory committee, and now a member of the board of directors of the Harbor Area Halfway Houses, I make an effort to bring all of these broader efforts and campaigns and coalitions that are working on to bring about changes in the services that are available, in the financial support that's available for the women in Holland House and mm-hmm. Hoffman House as well. I should mention that Hoffman House does have a time limit for mm-hmm. people there. They can only be there for 3 months, and their big goal when they're there is finding a job and finding a place to live. But for many of these women, there are many other problems. Many of those women who come there are people who have had previous problems with substance abuse. And so some of those women may go into Holland House. Also, many of those women have had their children taken away from them. And there are problems around their wanting to rebuild their lives so that they can hopefully get their children back. Mm. So there's efforts to work with them and work with the Department of Children's Services around these other concerns mm-hmm. that these women mm. have. And the women in Holland House, likewise, many of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those that have children do not have their children with them. Their children may be living with grandparents or with the father or in foster home. So you can see mm-hmm. that the problems that these women face are they're massive and they're sort of all over the map. It's mm-hmm. not just a question of learning a skill so you can get a job. But there are obviously the need to try to stay away from the abuse of substances as a way of dealing with the problems. One of the things, of course, that I've learned there and in other areas of my life is that people abuse substances almost universally, not just as something that they do as a recreational outlet, mm-hmm. but as a way of dealing with problems that they feel powerless to deal with.
Right. And obtain those problems.
Yes, and to what they call self-medicate, and the need at Holland House and Hoffman House is trying to help these women develop a sense of control over their lives, in a sense that they don't have to be powerless, and that there are people out there who can help, and that together with other people, they can bring about some changes. So I do, again, see this, even though it's working on a much with much narrower focus and on a much smaller scale, I see this as related to the larger goals that I have abided by mm-hmm. all my life, and just that it's a more personalized working on a more personalized level. But again, it does, you can see that connection between the larger problems in society and what these women are experiencing mm. as individuals. I'm not sure if I finished explaining that the advisory committee works to raise money for Holland House and to assist in meeting residents' needs around, you know, very mundane things like some of the furnishings for the house that they live in, and also seeks opportunities for women to attend community events so that they have some degree of involvement with the community, mm-hmm. although they do keep a very low profile. I also like to mention that since 1995, I was active for a while in the Bertha Reynolds Society, which is a national organization of social workers committed to working with their clients for social justice and change. And they established, it's a national organization, and it's named after Bertha Cap'n Reynolds, who was a wonderful progressive social worker who in the 40s established social work within unions, actually starting, I believe it was in the National Maritime Union, that she established a social work unit. And that was...
Excuse me. Does that mean the social workers...